So we're doing Maseches Avodah Zarah, and what we learn in the Pesukim in the Torah, which is familiar for all of us growing up, learning Chamishi Chumshi Torah, is that there's this prohibition to sort of get close to and to participate in the culture of paganism. And the question, And the question is why? Why is it prohibited to engage in their culture? So one of the two reasons that's given, these comments come from the Kahati introduction to Maseches Avodah Zarah, is that there's the issue of we're going to be learning from their ways, so we're going to be impacted by the pagan surrounding culture. This is ideas we have like Darkei Mori. Certain things are prohibited in halacha because non-Jews, like pagans, did them. But the other one is actually important to realize is how we are actually we have responsibility towards our fellow we call Bnei Noach who are existing. Meaning, even if they're not Jewish, there's still a concept of lifting iver that we can't act as a stumbling block for these people to violate isurei deraisa for someone who's not Jewish, right? Because Avodah Zarah is still prohibited to them. And therefore, we're going to see here, if they assess for the Rishonim. As we're going through, really just from the Gemara, of where exactly is the motivation coming from? Is it coming from our own motivation, as in we don't want to be affected by the culture and the practices of the host pagan culture? And that's why this halacha is like this? Or is it about our responsibility towards them, which is motivating a certain halacha? So those are two important facets to think about, two important factors and variables when it comes to this masechta. So, for example, one of the things that becomes prohibited, it's going to be discussed in the first Mishnah, is that things that are used either explicitly or in part of the ritualized practice of paganism is usur behana. There are very few things that are usur behana. There are plenty of things that are usur, like certain foods or certain actions, but there are very few things that come to mind that are actually usur behana. So that really highlights for many people the tremendous prohibition that the Avodah Zarah represents. Of course, we can understand that Avodah Zarah really attacks the core theological enterprise that Judaism represents. The Anochi that was communicated to us at Har Sinai is really undermined by Avodah Zarah. And so therefore, this has many different analogs and applications. That's why we have the idea of the wine that is possessed by non-Jews, that's produced by non-Jews. It's called the Gzera of Staminam. There's also the issue of when non-Jews would touch wine, and though the actual, let's say, the issue was that we were concerned or fearful that they were going to be going ahead and what's called minaseach, they were going to be rendering the wine fit for the use of pagan practices. At the same time, even though most non-Jews who you meet are not actively practicing pagans, at least vis-a-vis themselves, there'll be a whole discussion of Christianity and Islam and Hinduism as we're going through the Masechta, but nevertheless, this is still a formal gzera that was made, Gazru Chachamim, they made this formal edict, and therefore the issues of Negiyat Hayayin, of non-Jews touching wine, is still, specifically non-cooked wine, non-vushal wine, is still applicable to this day. So the question you may be asking yourselves is, why is it that this Masechta, Masechta Avodah Zarah, is in Seder Nezikin? Because Seder Nezikin is all about Torah, like Baba Kama, Shoshan Agas Esashor, you have even Sanhedrin, but why is Avodah Zarah about pagan practices? Why is it in the Seder? So the Rambam suggests that it's really because their discussion when at the end of Sanhedrin was discussing pagan practices and how we adjudicate those types of cases. And so sort of picking up the yarn from that point of a Sanhedrin, so the Rambam says that's why it's there. In fact, says the Rambam, that's why it's actually the last of the traditional Masechtos in Zizikin. Because says the Rambam, in his Perasha Mishnah, these situations where they'd be actually adjudicating in a court, cases of Avodah Zarah were very few and far in between. So in fact, this is a similar thing that Tosfos says, the very first Tosfos in the Masechta. In fact, it's a general note, generally, not every time, but generally the first Tosfos in the Masechta will ask, why is this Masechta here? It's a general thing that Tosfos likes to do. So you can look later at the first Tosfos for reasons why he thinks, different from the Rambam, that Masechta Avodah Zarah is in Seder Nezikin. So it is true, and of course many of you are familiar with this position of the Meiri, that in some way has completely rendered, at least in certain popular presentations of the Meiri, has rendered most of this Masechet inapplicable. And I would say that people many times have asked me, is this true lahalacha? I mean, Ari, when he was preparing his chabura, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, we were asking, do we actually paskin like the Meiri Lemaisa? And I would say it's yes and no. Meaning we're going to see there are some cases where it's definitely true at the Meiri's whole point, that these halachos are about certain cultures, certain very barbaric paganistic cultures that were hapez of bestiality, that were hapez of murder, and not really governed by a sense of a moral compass and a moral code. So it's true that l'halacha, some of those halachas that are really tied up in those types of assumptions are not really applicable in our modern day and age, but still, nevertheless, the Meiri is also not l'halacha in the sense that there are still many gzeros that were made for other purposes that are still going to be actually l'halacha going forward. So with that background, with the introduction, we're going to jump in to the first Mishnah, the first Amud of our Amud Yomid study of Masechet Avodah Zarah. So the Mishnah says, Lifnei Eidehen Shel Ovei Kochavim, before the festivals of pagans, Shloshi Yomim Aser La'seis U'Lateis Imahem. It is prohibited to do commerce with them. And of course, this is going to be a question we'll come back to in a few minutes, is what's the nature of this prohibition? Is this prohibition biblical? Because as we said, Avodah Zarah and a connection to Avodah Zarah is a very heinous crime, a very heinous prohibition according to the Torah. Again, as we said before, is it Isser Hana? So is it that this prohibition of commerce is biblical or is only rabbinic? We'll come back to that in a few minutes. So we're saying now that before their holidays, 3 days before, and of course, as the Gemara points out later in Daf Vav, Sunday, and definitely in the Christian calendar, was viewed already in the time of the rabbis in the 3rd century as a holiday, so already you should get you thinking of how does commerce become possible when literally 3 days before every single day of every Sunday becomes prohibited to do commerce. So we'll come back to that with just a brief foray into Tosfos. So it says, continues the Mishnah, not only that, but lehashilan ulish omihen, you can't lend things to them or lend or borrow from them. So what exactly is she'ela? So Rashi tells us that she'ela is when you have something which is something that you give to them or you take from them that is then returned. So for example, a computer. So you've borrowed, so you cannot 3 days before borrow their computer or lend your computer to them. Lahalvosan ulalavos mihen, to lend to them and to borrow from them. So again, it sounds like it's the same thing repeating itself. So Rashi then explains that a halva is a technical term of a lova, of a loan, refers not to an item that's going to be returned back in its entirety, but rather it refers to money, a monetary loan. And the expectation is that you borrow that money, then you spend that money, and then you pay back that loan, whatever the terms were set up. And also, it's prohibited lifporan lifporan lifroa mihen, to either pay them back 3 days before their holiday or to get paid back by them. So here we find our first machlokas in the Masechta. Reb Yehuda Omer lifroa mihen bibnei shemitzar hu lo, says Reb Yehuda, you can actually request that they pay you back 3 days before their holiday. Why? Because mitzar hu lo, it's actually painful for him. So that then begs the question, which is, why is it, what is the prohibition, what's the nature of the prohibition of why you can't do business or commerce with pagans before their holiday? So Rashi here, the first Rashi tells us that the reason why we can't do commerce with them, and again, all these other permutations of that, is because, the first Rashi, v'kulu mishum da'azil umoda la'avodas kochavim b'yom edo, because we're worried they're going to be so happy that they got this great deal from this Jewish merchant that they're going to go and thank, you know, their Zeus or Shiva, whoever, Vishnu, when they go to their to the pagan temple. Yes, Sahar.
Just what is it before on or before on mean?
So to either pay them back or to receive payment back for them for a type of loan. So this then goes back to our 2 points before about what are the nature of these prohibitions. So already, so Rashi sort of showed his hand. He thinks that the issue here is that by you doing commerce with them and they getting a good deal and them being excited about this opportunity to get this, whether you know this spices or animal or object for their pagan worship, they're going to come. You're going to be facilitating this process of pagan worship. Yeah, Zach.
I might be thinking about this from a very Judeo-centric point of view, but wouldn't you also want to pray to a god if you're in a really distressful time or very difficult time and you want kind of your god to help you through it? And so if you're making them unnecessarily pained, like...
Right, so they might be like, you know, let's say like, you know, Vishnu, help me because that darn Jew just, you know, ripped me off or something, or he just made me pay him back and now I have no money. So yeah, you might cause them to pray. It seems like what we're saying here is that the rituals, they're going to their temples, but it seems like the issue is more about the item you're doing, you're selling to them, that therefore enabling their admission and not the fact that they're going to pray because they're upset that they have to pay back their loan. So therefore, according to that, it makes a lot of sense. Rabbi Huda is now saying his svara is that because when they have to pay back the loan, they're not going to go ahead and be happy, although, as Zach was saying, he begs to differ. They're not going to be happy about this particular moment. It's actually just going to cloud their day, their holiday, their ritual, and therefore it's not a problem. However, it could be, we didn't finish the Mishnah, so it could be what motivates the Chachamim to disagree. It could be exactly what Zach was saying. So says the Chachamim, Amru lo, they said to him, Afo pisha mitzer hu achshav, smechul achar zman. Right? And I think, so literally what it means is that it's true that he is distressed, he's upset, that he has to pay back his large loan to this Jew, this Jewish landlord. We're not going to get into like anti-Semitic tropes right now. But
We could.
But you can just read the Washington Post for that. So,
it's on recording.
they don't sponsor it that way.
It's actually recording?
Yeah. La'acher's man. Meaning that, and I think the question is it not recording?
It's recording.
Oh, you're fine. Okay. So la'acher's man. So meaning, I think we can sort of just explain it very simply that the machlokus over here is how do you sort of look at the perspective of how do you look at the perspective? You look at the moment, the momentary sort of distress they feel, or you look at the bigger picture that they're actually going to be happy after they've sort of had this burden of this payment removed from them. That's going to be, as I think Zach was kind of alluding to, that's going to be sort of a moment of celebration and worship on their part. And you're playing a role. You're facilitating, you're enabling that. Any other questions before we start the Gemara? All right, so the Gemara is now going to get into a recondite type of discussion about diktuk, about what exactly is the proper pronunciation. Everyone in the room here, except for Sahar, is Ashkenaz, so none of us. And Gabe.
Wow.
And so only they can really appreciate. They can only really appreciate this discussion because for Ashkenazim, an aleph and an ayin are pronounced the same way. So for us, Ashkenaz, we're like, it's such a weird thing. But for actually Aidot HaMizrach, you'll see that it's actually, at least from in terms of like memorizing, because the way that the Mishnah was memorized, so it's an important discussion. So the Gemara says like this, Rav Shmuel, Rav Shmuel, so we're talking about first generation Amorayim, Chad Tani Eidehen, the Chad Tani Eidehen. Did I get that right? So either it's an aleph or with an I'm just going to make it like it's actually real. So again, what's the machlokas? So we'll see there's machlokas both in thematically, but also in terms of how they remember things. So Gemara says, Manatani Edehan with an aleph, lo mishtabish. So they didn't make, it's not a mess up, it's not a misreading or misremembering or mistransmitting of the Mishnah. Umanatani Edehan with an ayin, lo mishtabish. They also didn't mess up. They're both two legitimate ways. And so it's not just about the pronunciation, but it seems to be that they're a question of what's the theme they're trying to reference. Because again, it's not just information, but also certain themes and religious messages that the Mishnah is trying to give. So the Gemara says, Ma'ad tani edehem with an aleph, lo mishtavish. They didn't mess up, it's not a mistake. Why? There's a pasuk in Dvarim that says, Ki karov yom edam, when the day of their calamity approaches. So meaning that the association that we sort of, in our minds, we associate, we have a negative association with pagan rituals and pagan holidays. And so the word Eidam, which even today, I'm pretty sure that in Arabic, right? So the holiday is an Eid, right? So it's coming from, or Eid, however you pronounce it correctly. So Uman Netani Eidehem with an Ayin, Lo Mishtamish also, does that mess up? You see, there's another Pasuk, this is one in Yeshaya, Yitnu Eidehen Vitzdaku. That they will give forth, in this case, testimony, aid, aleph, dalet, as a witness, and they will be vindicated. So the Gemara says, well, okay, so if there's two legitimate psukim, so why, as we always ask, okay, so how come this one didn't hold like that one? So the Gemara says, Ma'an etani edayin with an aleph, ma'itam elotani edayin with an ayin, so amalacha, I'll say to you, and again, this is one of the challenges of Masechet Vazara. It's very important that having the hagaot, the I think it's the glosses. Yeah, I think it's the glosses on the side here. Because as the Rambam was telling you, Avodah Zarah was learned, but wasn't learned as much as other Masechtot, and therefore the editing job that was done on it wasn't as good as other Masechtot, and therefore it's always good to check back to see what was the right, what's the right text. But also because, given its topic and potentially its associations with some other host culture that doesn't really like us and has persecuted us for many, many centuries, aka Christianity, so a lot of the texts were taken out, and so therefore you have to see where what they're actually referring to. So here it says that Amlucha Iker Tavra Adif. That talking about, yeah, it's true, says the first Manda Amar, I could have used either or, but since I'd rather have the association with calamity than it being testimony. Okay, what about the other opinion? Manda Tani Edehan with an ayin, therefore it bespeaks a testimony. Why do they choose that and not with an aleph? My Tamilotani Edehan, Amlucha, Maka Garm Lutavra. What's causing the ultimate downfall and the calamity for these pagans? Eidos Shehidu Ba'atzman. It's the testimony that their own pagan practices will, so to speak, metaphysically come to bear on them. That's what's causing their ultimate destruction. Hilkach Eidos Adifa. Therefore, the association with aid, as in like your actions, your negative and paganistic actions will be reflecting you negatively, is a better association for the Tana. So the Gemara then says, wait a second. If is the pasuk in Yeshayah really talking about pagans to say that their actions will be testified upon them and they'll be vindicated? It's the topic there in Yeshayah is not talking about pagans, it's talking about Jews. How do we know that? We have a brisa that's going to show up later on Dalet Amud Bet. The Amr Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi kol mitzvah she Yisrael osim olam hazeh bos umeidos aleihen olam haba. That every single mitzvah that a Jew does will come and testify about them positively. Here you were committed to halacha and to Torah in the next world. Shneamar, how do we know? What's the proof text for this idea? The pasuk in Yeshayah we've been discussing, yitnu edehen v'yitztaku. El Yisrael, that they, meaning the mitzvos that we do, will be serve as edim, as witnesses about our actions, and we'll be vindicated, we'll be shown to be righteous in the next world. Continues the pasuk, Yishma'u v'yimru emes, that they will hear this whole process and they will say, it is true. Elu of the kochavim. That's the pasuk is referring, that's that the pagans will see, when Latid Lavo, when everyone's being judged, they'll see this judgment of the Jews positively and they'll say, that is objectively right, that is true. So therefore, that can't be the proper proof text for this notion of the association of Eidehen with an ayin with testimony. Therefore, Ela Amar Rav Huna, Berid of Yeshua, Mandamar Eidehen Mehacha. Where it is, why, what's the association of using the word Eidehen that the practices of paganism will testify negatively about their practitioners? From, not from Yeshaya, but rather in that parak, rather than the next parak, parak Mandalad, where it says, Yotzrei Pesel, right, the fashioners of graven images, Kulhu Tohu. It's completely vanities, the chamudeyam, and the things they desire, bal yo'ilu, and the things that they fashion cannot serve to help them. The edeyam hema, and they will testify with them. Very, very clearly from the context, it's talking about pagans and not Jews, and therefore it says the Gemara, that is the proof text for this, again, this describing the word edeyam, either as calamity or as a testimony about the negative practice, and that's the association that the Mishnah, that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi wants us to have. Okay, so until this point, so we'll pause for 1 second. How much are we at? We're at 17. So the goal is to try to make this between, 18 to 25 minutes, not much longer. There is a cool question. So we had mentioned at the outset of, well, if this is true, that every three days before every holiday, and as I mentioned before, that the Sunday is identified as that holiday, so how can commerce, specifically in a land where you think it's Avodah Zarah, as opposed to in Sephardic countries and Islamic lands, where most poskim felt that Islam was not Avodah Zarah, so how do you deal in a Christian country, in France and in Germany, where all these Jews who are really relying on commerce, how are they going to be able to survive? In fact, later on, is Tosfos here, this is the third Tosfos, Aser L'Seis L'Teis Imam, he mentions later on, the Gemara tells us that not only is an opinion that you can't do 3 days before, you can't do 3 days after. So if Sunday, right, if Sunday is a pagan holiday, you never do commerce. So therefore, as we said before, we asked the question of, what is the nature of the prohibition of the Mishnah? Is it biblical or is it rabbinic? And we said before, there is this Isra Na, so maybe you think that it was deraisin. So Tosfos makes, again, this long Tosfos, makes an argument saying that it must be that the prohibition is rabbinic. And therefore, Tosfos gives different reasons why it would be permitted. One of the more famous reasons that Tosfos gives over here is this concept of Mishum Eva. I'll just give it as an aside. When I was in YU, so I had the pleasure of studying with Professor David Berger, who's really an expert in medieval Jewish history, specifically in Christianity and relations between Jews and Christians. And he was saying there was a guy who was writing a book, and he wanted Professor Berger to review it. And it was about this issue of Jewish-Gentile commerce in the medieval period. And he said, well, yeah, I'll get to it, I'll have time, I don't know. Ends up being he didn't have the time, he was too busy doing other things, and he never got to review it, and the book comes out. And the way that the guy characterized the concept of Mishum Eva was that the reason why the Tosafists, as he called them, the Balei Tosos, permitted Ashkenaz Jewry to engage in commerce with Christians was because to take advantage of the hated Gentile. That Mishum Eva means that we want to basically exploit the hated Gentile. That's not what it means. So Professor Berger wrote a whole like scathing critique. You don't know anything. How can you publish this book? The guy's like, I gave you my book to review. Why didn't you say anything? He's like, yeah, I assumed you would like have some small errors. Not like you're a complete Am Haaretz. And so the actual meaning of the term Ma'eva is that what's going to happen is that if we don't do commerce with them, so not only they're not do commerce with us, but it's going to lead to really negative repercussions for the Jewish people. The fact that you say, oh, why can't we, imagine the scenario, you know, do a role play. Oh, Eitan, why can't we do, you know, commerce with you? Oh, because you're a terrible pagan who serves, you know, worships idols, and Jesus is, you know, isn't a god. I don't think it's going to work out so well for you, right? And it's not going to work out so well for you. Yeah, all right.
But you still affirm that, even if it's Mishimeva. You still affirm the idea that you are still saying that, even if it's like a technical thing of why you can't do commerce, but you're still saying, we do not want to make you happy on your holiday, for example.
True, but I think there's different levels of like of engaging in commerce and like some
the practical
of,
is definitely.
Oh, definitely, yes. The value judgment.
The value
yes, 100%. The value judgment still remains. In general, this is a great example of like a Tosafist approach that gets talked about a lot by medieval Jewish history scholars like Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik and others, of how like, the Dali Tosafists came in to certain areas and locales, whether it was in Bohemia or Germany or in France, and they saw certain practices that seemed counter to Halacha, counter to the Gemara. This is a great one of their examples, of more famous examples, and how they made sense of the facts on the ground and made it sort of made it merge with the actual halacha as it's supposed to be practiced. Okay, so I thought, so how much more time are we at? All right, so let's just try to begin the next part of the Gemara, so we'll finish a full Amma today. So the Gemara says, Darash Rav Chanina, this is going to be, again, a very extensive agata about what happens in the future and the different arguments that the non-Jews and the pagans will make in terms of squaring their account with God. So Darash Rav Chanina Bar Papa, some say it was Rav Chanina Bar Papa, Vitim Rabbi Simlai, La'atid Lavo, when it comes to the future, redemption, maybe a Kadosh Baruch Hu Sefer Torah, God will bring a Sefer Torah, Minicho Becheko, and yeah, he will place it in his by his chest. Va'omer lemisha asek ba yavu yitos charo. Like whoever who actually spent the time in engaging and live the Torah, observing life, come and receive your reward. Miyad mitkapsim v'bayin ovtin kochavim beir buvia. So all of a sudden, a huge mass of pagans gathers in front of God. Shenamar, what's the source of this idea? Again, Bar Pasuk in Yeshaya, kol agoyim nikpitzu yachdav. Again, so Yeshaya's prophecy is talking about the future judgment that all the nations of the world will gather together. Armelan Akarash Baruchu, Al Tichlechsu Lefnei Berubuvia. So he says, like, show a little respect. Don't just like all jump atop me like I'm a Sephardic rabbi and you're trying to get, you know, kiss my hand and get a bracha. Ela Tikanes Kol Uma V'Uma V'Sofraha. Rather, everyone should be B'Sheket U'Benacha and Savlanut. Come with all your sages and your leaders in front of me. What's the proof for that notion? Again, the pasuk in Yeshaya V'Yasvu L'Umim, that the Umim gathered V'Ein L'Um Ela Malchut, refers to the kings and the princes and the governors of each locale. Shneimar, how do I know that le'um means malchut? Another pasuk in Bereishit says le'um mil'um yamatz. It's referring to Yaakov and Esav. These two, and the way that it's translated by Targum Unkelis is these two nations who are sort of warring, who are going against each other in the womb. So the Gemara, and this is the last point we'll just make before it gets to the whole discussion of Rome and Persia. So the question is, and those of you who've done Rosh Hashanah, God, there's no word buvia. God is able to isolate every single person, as the Gemara Rosh Hashanah Rashi points out, says that everyone passes in front of God, kechut ha-sa'ara. So if that's true, then mi'ika or buvia, kame kadosh baruch hu, really, God doesn't know, couldn't really speak to each person individually. He had to get them, to show some politeness to each other. So the Gemara says, of course not. Elo ki hechid de lor buvia, levyu inhu, b'hadayadad lishmu ma'i damar lehu. Not because it was for him. Of course, for God, it's not a problem, but because he wanted to teach them a lesson. And even Latid Lavo, he's trying to show them a lesson that they should be able to hear one another. And with tomorrow, and whenever we figure the time, we'll continue with Bet Amud Bet.